Because a lot of time went by. All right, here we go. Let's see. We're rolling. Okay, I got to get the screen up here. Hang on a second here. Okay. So anyway, we're talking about judgments next. Okay. Well, I guess we could talk about the bench warrant. We have we issued a bench warrant here against one judge, and this has basically all the same stuff that's in there. You need to read this carefully, but basically, it has the usual judicial cognizance. It has those declarations or decreeing of what the law is, and then we get down here. Where is this now? Findings of fact. Conclusions of law, discussion and conclusions of law, section 3. And it's all this stuff I read before, okay? I copied a lot of it over. But the one difference is that we actually issued a bench warrant. Now, the word bench is synonymous with the word court. So a bench warrant is a court warrant. And let's see. So we fined him $500, and of course they never paid it. But let's see.
Who was it you fined here now?
The judge.
Oh, we still are talking about the judge.
Yeah, okay. This is another. This is now the order with a bench warrant, whereas the other one was just contempt of court. Let's see. Here it is. So all of that stuff before was the same, but since he would not obey a prior order. So here's what it says. The above-entitled constitutional court, a superior court of record of California, issues this bench warrant and commands that any coroner, sheriff, marshal, peace officer, or other officer of the state of California or the United States of America, hereinafter collectively officers, shall attach the body of Arnold Marcus unless Arnold Marcus issues and delivers to said any of the officers an inferior court order discharging with prejudice the case in the inferior special superior court of the state of California, known as People of the State of California.
May I?
Sure.
Can I say that one more time, please?
Sure.
Okay, sorry. By the time I got there, I forgot the total.
Yeah. There you go. So, okay, thank you. So, and said order shall be executed forthwith and returned to the clerk of this constitutional court. If Arnold Marcus cannot be found, any judge of said inferior court shall stand in place of Arnold Marcus. If no such judge can be found, the clerk of the inferior court shall issue and certify said order. A copy of this bench warrant shall be given to Arnold Marcus or any judge subjected to this order. If no judge or clerk of said inferior court can be found, then the sheriff shall forthwith release and fully restore the rights and liberty of Imer Hurt, and from that time forward, by order of the above-entitled constitutional court, the sheriff may disregard all directives and orders of said inferior court, for said inferior court and its directives and orders are adjudged by the constitutional court to be without jurisdiction and will be without jurisdiction and of no effect. And then we sealed it, as well as signed it. There's an example of a seal.
You have to make your own seal?
Why not? Looks good. You can use the word seal, but believe me, when you put a gold seal on it, it makes them stop and think, believe it or not. Okay.
When and how should the seals be used?
Whenever you issue an order.
Okay.
You seal the order. That gives it the validity. Okay, now let's go to, that was the bench warrant. Now we have a judgment. So here we have a judgment against all these people. And basically the judgment is kind of really the same stuff that you have in the rulings and in the bench warrant. Same stuff. Got an introduction, jurisdiction of this court, the facts, conclusions of law, the actual judgment, and the reconsideration of judgment. Okay? And again, see, we go down here, even though this is a final judgment, we have In accordance with Rule 59E of the Federal Rules of Civil Procedure, any party may move for reconsideration of judgment within 10 days of entry of the judgment. The court, mindful of the rights of the parties and the importance of fair play, will liberally construe the arguments presented. You know, we're not hard about these things. And there's the seal again. So, but the defendants are enjoined from interfering in any way with the counterclaimant's lawful right to negotiate and enter into contracts. Because that's what they did. They interfered with that person's. So that's essentially it. I mean, all these orders are really, I've read you one of them thoroughly, but the others are really, I just lift it up and put it in, and then you make little adjustments for the situation, you know, get the names right, and get the situation right, and what the facts were, but the law pretty much is the same. But when you, every time you write one of these things, it's a custom job. You have to read everything and see if it's related to what you're doing. So I'm going to quickly bypass that one. And now we have the law of the case. And this is it right here. This is all that stuff that I've shown you before. We read through a lot of it. But these are decreed by the sovereign. Okay? The law of the case is decreed as follows. Zing. And this was incorporated by reference into the judgment. So when you write up an action, the court rules typically say that there's a 15-page limitation, and you have to get permission of the court if you need more, okay? And you can get it, but it's just that it's a little thing. They want to limit it because, frankly, almost all cases can be done in less than 15 pages. The evidence can add up to more, but the actual lawsuit usually is 10 pages or 5 or 15. I don't think I've ever gone over 15. You know, and if you do, you cut it down. It's easy enough to do. Just write better. You know. So then there's the writ of execution. I wanted to get to this. This is kind of important. Now the writ of execution. Here's a form. Okay. It's by the judicial council, I believe, but this is a judicial council. And basically, I wanted to mention something else. On the judgment, we've got the law of the case, but down here at the end, I think, let's see, 29, what happened here? Oh, that's law of the case. Wrong one. Okay, yeah, the judgment. On the judgment, we threw in this one thing, which we say, where is it? At least I thought I put it there. Well, maybe I cut and paste this one too fast. Basically, what you want to do is you want to enable a writ of execution. Okay? And somewhere in here we say that. But I'm not seeing it here. I may not have. I thought I put that in here, though.
If it were there, what would it say?
That's what I'm trying to. It's always hard to remember these things. That's why I do so much cut and pasting. Mm-hmm. And I never then get it fixed in my brain. I know it's there, but I have to go find it and then copy it.
Oh, I see.
And never really fix it in my brain. Apparently, this is not it. Let's go back again here. Contempt. I thought it was in a judgment. Well, I think I can show what it's supposed to say. Let's go to the action. I think I put it in the prayer. Here it is. Right here, paragraph 65. For order to let execution issue. Is that showing up okay on the TV?
Yeah.
Okay. See, this is the prayer where you're asking the court to issue these orders. And let's see, for interest as suggested by the California Code and for order to let execution issue. When you say let when you say let execution issue, you're saying that the execution, the writ of execution, is allowed to go out. It's allowed to be issued. Let it be issued. Okay? That's the clerk's authorization. Doesn't have to go back to the court. You ask for it, she fills it out, and it's gone. Okay? And that writ of execution is the authority for the sheriff to go collect, do whatever he has to do to collect. You can give him specific instructions. And then normally the way it works is you find out where those assets are, and then you go back, fill this out, give it to the sheriff, and he's authorized to go out and pick it up. And he carries a gun with him. Okay? So you have here, to the sheriff or marshal of the county of whatever, you are directed to enforce the judgment described below with daily interest and your cost as provided by law. To any registered process server, you are authorized to serve this writ only in accord with certain code of civil procedure. A couple of them there. And you have the name of the judgment creditor. That's you. And then you have the judgment debtor. You put his name and address, last known one. And you have here you have all the stuff filled in. Total judgment, cost after judgment. You add them together. It's almost like filling out a tax return.
Yeah.
You know, interest after judgment. You add the total, and that's his mission to go get it. And he can do whatever is required in order to collect it. And this is a two-page deal. There's a notice of sale. Sometimes certain things require a notice of sale. Let's see. And then here's a notice to the person served. See next page for important information. So, all right. So the first page was instructions for the sheriff. Looks like the second page is, additional judgment creditors. Notice of sale has been requested by somebody. There's a joint debtor involved. So what you fill in depends on what the case is, you know, what came out of that case. And then there are certain things that are exempt, which you have to go to the codes. The court will hear objections to enforcement of the judgment under CCP 1174.3 on the following dates. So if they, you know, if there's an application for a delay or something like that, typically you cannot take the tools of the trade away from a person. You can't remove his way of making a living. Okay? So if he needs his car and he needs his mechanic's tools or whatever, he can keep those. But otherwise, and then I guess there's some minimum value on the house, something like that. So that's basically the deal. Fill in the form.
Is that for private parties, or is it also used when you're suing the state or the...
Any judgment.
So what would you put down as property, though?
Well, you got to go find the property first.
What?
Yeah, car, house.
Of the state.
Of the state? Well, they have lots of buildings.
Okay.
Okay. Sure.
But how? So then you would claim to that. But how would you convert that to?
No, the sheriff has a sale. Sheriff's sale.
Huh. Of a building.
Just like foreclosure. Same deal.
Okay.
Only it's got a judgment backing it.
But why wouldn't they just? I mean, why couldn't he compel them to issue a check or whatever from the state?
Maybe they're hiding. Oh well, from the state, they just say, "Well, make us," you know, and you have to get serious, and then finally you might end up taking a building. In fact, that was really funny. I remember I got an email one time. This attorney, she was just sending out a general email, and I was on her mailing list, and she was talking about how she had a problem with the cops, and then one day something happened. I don't know what it is. And it turned out, the police station was privately owned and they didn't pay the taxes, and she got it on a tax sale and she evicted the cops from their police station. And she was really happy about that. She was an attorney. Little poetic justice there. Okay, now, as long as we're on high-speed mode, cover another question that we had discussed, which is the this what to say when you're in front of a judge. Okay, this is how you should handle it. Now what we'll do is we'll go to that website. I actually have it on my computer. It's not a true internet access. And There we go. Okay, here's Internet Explorer. And let's see, law notes, and we go to procedure. And then what do you do when you're in front of a judge? Okay. And enlarge the text again. Let's go one more step. Okay. Okay, you're one of the people, and you're in a court of record, all that. And when in court, there's no need to argue your case. All of your arguments should have been made in the preceding paperwork. The only reason for a court hearing is to give the court an opportunity to ask questions of the litigants to clarify any points. Anything you say in court is considered a novation, that means a modification, to your papers on file. Your verbal actions override your previous papers. Here are some suggestions on conducting a court procedure. Do not verbally discuss anything in court. Can't overemphasize that. These guys are word masters. In fact, it says here, the judges and attorneys in court are word masters. They are much more practiced at word interpretation and manipulation than you. Anything you say will be held against you and will provide opportunities to nullify your paperwork. The best thing is not to discuss anything. When the judge asks you anything about your papers or points, you should only say, "I have nothing to say. It's all in my filed papers, Your Honor." That forces the judge to consider your papers rather than what you may say in a hearing. Object to anything of which you do not approve that occurs in the courtroom. If anything happens in the courtroom, you should object. Here's a typical courtroom scenario. Yes, sir.
I've been learning also that when the judge asks you your name,
mm-hmm.
and if you respond to that by saying what your name is,
mm-hmm.
That can you're actually agreeing to the court.
Mm-hmm.
How do you respond to it when you're asked?
If you did a counterclaim, you're in charge. If one of your servants wants to know who the boss is, you can tell him your name.
Hmm.
Who's the sovereign here?
You're looking at a different scenario that is not as effective as this stuff.
No, if you're going to be a defendant, yeah, there's all kinds of traps and screwing around with the language and capitalization or whatever. Who knows what they make up? But when you're the judge, you got a different ball game here. And the way you get to be in that position is you've got to do a counterclaim. You've got to sue them. And once you're the plaintiff or the counterplaintiff, either one, And the question is jurisdiction. Because that's what stops them. And once you're in that position, that's it. You got the power. Okay? If they take that power away from you, it's going to be because they broke the law. And there's hell to pay somewhere down the line. You know, they always look good today, but watch out for tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you pile this record up, and pretty soon that gets to be a burden for them. That's why that guy ended up with a bench warrant. Okay? Finally, and he couldn't say anything because we had six different contempts of court on his record now. So what is he going to say? Well, I respect the law. You know, and here we lay it right out there that here's why he's in contempt. Here's the laws he broke, the sovereign law. Okay? So we're in such solid ground that there's no defense unless you accept the idea that, well, we don't have any law anyway. We'll just do anything we want. But I don't think we've reached that point yet. We've reached the point where it's very difficult if you do the right thing, whereas they should cut you some slack. They don't. But it hasn't totally been trashed. If you do it right, you have your effect. Okay, so here we are. If anything happens in the courtroom, you should object. Don't allow any decisions. Okay, even if it's their court, once you have jurisdiction over them, they must stop everything until they prove satisfactorily to your court, and you're the one who judges, as to whether or not they have jurisdiction. Now, you cannot just be arbitrary and say, oh, well, I'm boss, I'm right. Okay, you've got to impress the world with your correctness, but it's easy enough to do. You know, you see it in these writings. You read these judgments, you'll see how we lay it out, why it was that we have the authority. So, okay, here's a typical scene in the courtroom. Something happens, whatever it is, I don't know, and you say, I object. And he says, why do you object? And you say, it's not my wish. And he says, well, if that's the best you can do, you're overruled. And you say, well, for the record, I do object. And he says, well, your objection is noted. That's it. End of conversation. Move on to the next subject. Okay? It's not the end of the event here. It's the end of that conversation. You'll pick up it again on your next rescission order. Okay? All right. Now, that's all that's necessary. Then you move on to the next item of business. The judge is going to do whatever he chooses. You have not the power to stop him at that time, just as you have no power to stop a robber from robbing you. At this point, your only goal is to object for the record. Later, after you leave the courtroom, you type and file the court order to vacate or correct the judge's decision. But remember, this can only be done if you are the plaintiff, one of the people of the jurisdiction, in a court of record, and have not given anyone, including the judge, any permission to do anything in your case. Okay. Remember to reassert your demand. If you are a defendant who is the petitioner in a habeas corpus or a plaintiff in a counterclaim, you should repeat to the other court your demand to be released. This is basically aimed at if you're in jail. Okay? And because you are challenging jurisdiction, because they asserted jurisdiction, you should from time to time remind them of your demand to be immediately released from their custody. And I know it's hard, but you got to keep a record of these things. Maybe you're in jail. You can mail it out to somebody, and they just collect the mail. But one day, there's going to be hell to pay. You know, those guys, it's on the record. You go after them, and it'll be a big problem for them because the logic is impeccable. You know, how do you take over the sovereign when... in the government code itself, which they are subject to, but you're not, that says you don't yield your sovereignty. It doesn't create sovereignty, just you don't yield it. And they're now informed through the government code, yes.
What happens if, in my case, I did, I wasn't really doing this, I was doing more counterclaims, and I did a counterclaim, however, at the time, I didn't put out one of the people and in this court of record. I did put a counterclaim challenging jurisdiction.
Yeah, that's fine. What you do is you can kind of... First of all, I mean, you have your rights. Right. Even if you don't mention them, you got them, okay? But what you do is somewhere along, you're going to generate paperwork, okay? Whether you have an answer, they do something and you answer, or you originate the paperwork. Either way, you just slip in that sentence that comes now, you put your name... and in this court of record, object to so-and-so. You're just like a little side issue, right? But that fixes it.
Right. But what I'm trying to say is that also on top of that, that when I filed my counterclaim, the judge basically said, well, I'm not going to enter your paperwork into the record.
That's all right.
And he said, he dismissed my case.
Yeah. Yeah, that's okay. Now you issue an order reinstating it. No problem.
Okay. So there's no statute of limitations like you said in common law, right?
That's true. Because there's no statutes. Common law is a separate category. It's not a statutory thing. Yes, sir.
Yeah, I just wanted to give you another example similar to his, like, Doc's case. He was kind of threatened in court, and he said not guilty, and so he probably needs to have a new paperwork that sort of withdraws his plea altogether.
Well, you could do that, but basically, these people are on a roll. They get going and they do these things, and you're just going to have to give them a notice and tell them, look, everything past a certain point has no validity because they never answered the basic question, which is jurisdiction. So whatever they did is not valid.
But you did too. You pleaded instead of not pleading.
Yeah, but you're under duress.
Okay, so...
It's an invalid contract for that reason.
Yeah, I understand that, but just give me a general idea. Like, in this case, what would you write? Just give me a couple of sentences.
Well, first of all, they made an order.
A what?
They made an order.
Okay.
Okay, they ordered you to put a plea in. And you buckled under because of duress.
Duress.
Okay? Now, add that to your lawsuit.
Coercion?
Sure.
Yeah.
Coercion.
Yeah.
It's extortion. No different than somebody on the street with a gun in your face.
And isn't it true that that you can also, if you win, you can submit your bills of time or whatever it is you spent? As long as it's true and you don't pad the paper. I don't know if you've heard of that or you've done that.
Well, you always want to tell the truth. And if
right.
if they cause you an injury, loss of time, yeah, that's billable.
But you decide how much that is, as long as it's...
Well, basically, you probably have a work history, and so there's an average value on your time of some kind. You know, you can come up with something reasonable. Sure. Sure. That's why they don't pick on the president of General Motors. The bill would be too big. They can't afford his salary. So, okay, well, let's see. Now, I want to attack a different point here. We have jurisdiction, and we have the Internal Revenue Code. We had some discussion about Section 7806. And basically, Section 7806 says that the Internal Revenue Code is not law. And so here's the key sentence right here. In 7806, paragraph B, and it's the second sentence. It says, "Note, right here," and basically, that's it. That's the heart of it. "No inference, implication, or presumption of legislative construction shall be drawn or made by reason of the location or grouping of any particular section or provision or portion of this title." So that we're talking about the whole title, Title 26. That's the Internal Revenue Code. And somebody walks up to me, and you should say, They might say to me, "Hey, you have to pay taxes." And I say, "Well, where's the authority for that?" And they say, "Well, it's section so-and-so of the Internal Revenue Code says all persons have to pay." "Oh, it's in that part of the Internal Revenue Code." They say, "Yeah. Well, it says right here, you cannot assume any legislative construction." In other words, those are words for law, okay? Legislature didn't mean anything by it. You can't construct anything out of the fact that it's in a certain location or group in this code. Okay? It's not law. Now, the basis for that, not the basis, but what happened, we have the Nordby Supply Company versus the United States. And listen carefully, because this requires a little bit of reverse thinking. Okay? There's a little twist in this. But what happened is that there was a contention between the IRS and Nordby Supply Company. IRS is saying pay the tax, and Nordby is saying no. So IRS took them to court, I think. No, Nordby took them to court. Okay? And the court agreed with Nordby, saying, yeah, the code says that they can't tax. It was some other section, 4161. 4167 says IRS cannot tax. So IRS lost the trial. IRS then appealed to the appellate court. And they said, in essence, that 7806 says that the code is not law, therefore we are not subject to whatever the Internal Revenue Code says. And
we
the IRS.
Oh, we the IRS, okay.
Yeah, it's not law. We're not subject. I mean, that, I'm giving you a very quick. I mean, they use a lot of words that hide it, but when you read it carefully, this is essentially what they're saying. Hey, it's not law. It doesn't apply to us. You cannot prevent us from taxing by quoting a code out of the Internal Revenue Code. Okay? And the appellate court said IRS was correct. You couldn't use the code to stop them. Therefore, Nordby had to pay the tax. There's the twist. Because the issue that was brought up to the appellate court was whether or not the code could be used to stop the IRS. Nobody brought up the issue as to whether or not the IRS could tax. And that had already, you see, that was already there. IRS says we can tax. They're saying, no, you can't because the code says you can't. IRS says, no, the code has no authority. But we never got to the core issue.
Oh, man.
Okay? So that's an anomaly there. But look at the beauty of it. First of all, the legislature said that the Internal Revenue Code is not law. In 7806, they say that. Second, the executive branch said the Internal Revenue Code is not law. And then finally, the judicial branch said the Internal Revenue Code is not law. Hey, you got all three branches on your side.
Has anybody ever argued it from that perspective that you know
of? Nordby and IRS did. Okay. Well, it's the only one I know of, the only case. I haven't thoroughly researched it, but it's a key case, okay? Now, I do know this, that about 20 years ago, about 20, IRS started putting on the passport application that you had to give them information, social security number, and sort of stuff like that. So when I applied for a passport back then, where the little box was that said social security number, I wrote in exempt per 26 USC 7806. Okay, I got my passport. They didn't get the information.
There's actually even an agency right now that's doing, or a group that's doing, issuing world passports.
Sure.
They've been accepted here
sure.
in the United States.
Oh, yeah. And a long, long time ago, there was a guy who is still alive who he set up his world something or other, and he's been issuing passports that have actually saved lives. People are showing the passport and saying, hey, I'm a world citizen, not an American. You know, saved their lives. But, yeah, this guy, he traveled all over the world. He was in jail many times in many different countries because he kept saying, I am a world citizen, a citizen of the United Nations, okay? Now, me, I prefer being in sovereign capacity than be a citizen. But nevertheless, and he developed it, and he's issuing passports too. Has been for decades.
Yeah. Well, this one isn't claiming that you're a world citizen. It's simply a passport issued by this group that's for you.
Well,
to
you're a diplomat. You're a diplomat.
Sure. But it's been accepted here in the United States.
Sure.
They've been stamping the passports.
Sure.
They're accepting them.
Sure.
So.
Mm-hmm. That's great.
Yeah.
Okay. Now let's see. What else can we cover quick? We have a whole minute, I suppose. Something like that?
It's already 9.
Yeah, it's already 9.
902.
Well, I got to show you one more thing anyway. It's real short and quick. Let's go to the foundation, and then we have the court of record. And down here, we have superior court versus inferior court. I've been talking about this all evening. Well, here's the skinny on it. A court of record is a superior court. A court not of record is an inferior court. And then here are some cases. Inferior courts are those whose jurisdiction is limited and special and whose proceedings are not according to the course of the common law. That makes an inferior court if it's not in the common law. Okay? That's ex parte Kearney. And then down here, look what it says. This is a good one. The only inherent difference ordinarily recognized between superior and inferior courts is that there is a presumption in favor of the validity of the judgments of the superior court. And no judgment, presumption in favor of the judgments of the inferior court. I'm kind of filling in what it says. I'm not reading exactly. And that a superior court may be shown not to have had power to render a particular judgment by reference to its record. Yeah, you look at its record and it's going according to statutes. It's obviously not a superior court. It's an inferior court. And that it says, note that in California, superior court is the name of a particular court. But when a court acts by virtue of a special statute conferring jurisdiction in certain class of cases, like criminal courts, civil courts, right, family courts, then it is a court of inferior or limited jurisdiction for the time being, no matter what its ordinary status may be. And that was Heidenfeld versus Superior Court. And then, look here, there's another good one down here. Look at this one at the bottom. The judgment of a court of record whose jurisdiction is final is as conclusive on all the world as the judgment of this court would be. It is as conclusive on this court, meaning the Supreme Court, as it is on other courts. It puts an end to inquiry concerning the fact by deciding it. That's it. Court of record decides something, there's no appeal.
Well, that's pretty strong.
Yeah, sure is. I love being sovereign and I love courts of record. I mean, you hit them with that, and that's what we put in these decisions. You'll read it on this website.
And so it helps that California is, it states that all courts are courts of record.
Yeah.
It helps.
Yeah, yeah, that's in the. That's in the Constitution, Article 6, Section 1 of the 1879 Constitution of California.
I have a question. Do you think that judge, when he first started out, it appeared as though he really had no clue?
Of course he had no clue. Absolutely had no clue. None of them. They never do. They assign it to assistants who are got normal training. And even if they read it themselves, I mean, that thing, they just buzz over. They just don't get the impact. I mean, it just doesn't happen. And here you come, the one...
Yeah, it wasn't until you got to the point where you were...
You're one out of 100,000 that comes through, you know?
Which one was the case you said in your previous audios where you got a judge taken off and then...
We went through that. That was that example where I showed we found him in contempt of court. That was the same judge.
Yeah. He got off other 800 other cases?
Yeah, 900, yeah.
900?
That's what I remember, yeah.
He took us back after the fact to the beginning of that judge and saying, that doesn't matter.
And the guy...
So what?
And the guy that replaced him, he just made like, you know, well, it's a transfer of power kind of thing. You know, new judge coming, the other one being reassigned. Yeah. Well, when we looked up his record, it turned out that, number one, he used to be the chief judge of the appellate department of the Superior Court. I mean, they make case law that gets published, all right? So he knew his business. And not only that, he was a member of a group of judges whose hobby was the common law, okay? And they're saying, oh, we just brought in, well, we saw what we had. But you know what? He still had no power to make decisions. I don't care how smart he was.
And how'd you find out that his record was that?
You go down to the law library. They have little resumes on all the judges.
Any law has to be the law library has to be in that.
Well,
city.
In the area where the judge is, sure. Yeah, I mean, lawyers want to know.
On the internet, very often you can go to the Facebook
court
and they have.
Is there a good way to find out what somebody's property is?
Yeah, go to any real estate agent. He'll look it up and show you who the owners are.
Oh, so if you know the name, how do you find...
He'll do a name search.
Yeah, he can do a name search.
Sure, you can do it on the whole state.
Yeah. Escrow companies are another good one.
Yeah.
Oh, that can, as a matter of public record?
Yeah, yeah. So just go to any real estate agent who's, you know, been around a year or two, and he'll tell you all the resources for finding information on properties.
Massive amounts of resources. They do that. There. As part of their,
it's a government agency. You just type in somethinggot.gov and it tells you every piece of property and who owns it.
I just can't think of it off the top of my head.
Can hear you.
You would need like a private detective to do that, correct?
No, you do it.
No.
Like I said, go to. Come on, just go to any real estate agent.
I can find out right now, sir. You need an agent. You can find out.
But
it's a .gov thing on the internet.
No, .gov.
Listen, we got.
I did it in Florida.
I suggest a real estate agent for just one reason. They're a dime a dozen. They're all over the place.
Department of Land Management, is that what you're referring to?
Yeah.
So is that it?
I guess that's it. I mean, we're out of time. We're supposed to clean up.
No, he was saying, is that it? When she said the Department of Land Management .gov. And you were saying, is that it?
Yeah, we're at the end. It's 9 o'clock.
Thank you.
Are we kicked out by 9?
Yeah.
I thought we were staying till midnight.
Well, normally we would, but the restaurant wants to go home.
Did you bring enough sleeping bags?
Yeah, he said we had an hour to get out of here.
Because we got to clean it, right?
Yeah. And he has to burn this for you. Yeah. So, you know, once he shuts off, then he has to complete the burn process so that you can walk out of here with a disc.
Well, thank you very much, Mr.
Might a fine welcome. Yeah. Great. Thank you. Thank you.
The special master.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah.
It's always kind of fun.
Do you have a mail?
Okay, real quick.
Mm-mm.
Okay, what is
I'll
it?
I'll give you the address right here.
Okay,
if you want to look up the property somebody owns, you can go to Zaba, Z-A-B-A, search, all one word, Zaba, Scarch.com.
You need to find out what they own.
You can even register on the website, too.
Unless they got it in a different name or, you know,
an LLC or a corporation or something else, but if it's in the name, it'll show up.
Preservation of rights better than a misprint.
If anybody wants the jurisdictionary stuff, I have all the discs.
Okay, here we go.
Yeah, so you want to give me $20?
How much?
$20, and I'll make copies of discs and send them to you.
Okay.
That's fair. Absolutely.
Yeah. Watch 249 now.
Can we get your information?
Yeah.
Yeah, there. What are there? Four discs, is it? It's four discs, isn't it?
Yeah.
Four, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So how do we do this? Our number?
Good deal.
Thank you.